everyone, and welcome to Advanced Engineering Talks, a podcast created by the Advanced Engineering team. ATalks brings together some of the newest and most innovative minds in engineering and manufacturing to help better the future for our industry. We hope you enjoy the series.
Hello, and welcome to another Advanced Engineering Talks podcast, where innovation never sleeps. Why is there a gender gap in manufacturing? A recent report quotes that the manufacturing workforce is made up of just 26% women, against a backdrop of 51% of women in the general population. With the need to inspire and train more engineers than ever before from an early age, what's being done to engage, develop and retain what's clearly an untapped and very needed talent pool? Here, we listen in on our recent Women in Manufacturing panel at Advanced Engineering, which was held in November 2023 at the NEC. Listen out for some insights and discussion from some of our key industry players.
Hi, everyone. My name is Megan Renane. I'm Head of Industrial Technologies and Manufacturing at Innovate UK KTN. Today's panel is delivered today by the Women in Manufacturing Initiative. The Women in Manufacturing Initiative is a network of industrial and academic professionals with a shared interest in encouraging diversity and inclusion in the sector. It is led by the Institute for Manufacturing and Innovate UK Made Smarter Innovation Programme and supported by Lloyds Bank today. We had our first conference yesterday at the MTC called Changing Perceptions, which was very well attended and was really inspiring and motivating. And today we have an amazing panel at Advanced Engineering, and it's excellent that we're on the main stage as a Women in Manufacturing panel, and thank you ever so much for joining us. We're going to discuss two reports today that have been written recently this year about women in manufacturing. But first, let me introduce you to our esteemed panel. So, Jennifer, could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure, of course. I'm Jennifer Castañeda Navarrete. I work as Senior Policy Analyst at IFM Engage, which is the knowledge transfer arm of the Institute for Manufacturing at the University of Cambridge. I'm an economist, and in my work, I work with national governments, with international organizations in industrial and innovation policy. An increasing part of my work is trying to mainstream gender within innovation and industrial policies. I'm happy to be here.
Thanks, Jennifer. Emily, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Emily Smith. I work for a company called MicroSpring and Presswork. I've worked there for 9 years now. I'm a senior sales engineer, specialising in aerospace and defence. We manufacture precision press work for safety critical applications. So I've got a bit of a passion for STEM volunteering and mentoring at work and training, and obviously this is a really important initiative to promote as a business.
Thanks, Emily. Jill, can you introduce yourself?
Hi everybody, my name's Jill McBride. I'm a Professor of Innovation and Operations Management at Strathclyde University. But I'm also co-director of Interact. And Interact is a network that's part of the Made Smarter Innovation family. And Interact is really all about how do we encourage this digital technology change, but from a human perspective. So one of the things I do is I lead a team of researchers that are looking at the future of manufacturing work. So I'll tell you a bit more about that today.
And Riddhi?
That's going to be a really incredible panel to follow, but I'm going to try my best. My name is Riddhi Karambelkar. I work as the Head of Manufacturing Engineering at Brompton Bicycles. So if you've ever seen those folding bright Bromptons zipping, zapping around London City or the UK, that's what I and my team are involved in manufacturing. I've educated in aerospace engineering with honors in mathematics and chemistry. I worked within the aerospace sector for about 6 or so years, but then I've predominantly worked in the automotive industry, like companies like Volkswagen, for a very long time. But once I came to London, saw the Brompton Bicycle, sort of fell in love with manufacturing and what we can do to the manufacturing sector within the United Kingdom, and haven't left since. So really looking forward to today's discussion.
Thanks, Riddhi. Okay, so let's start. So Jennifer, you wrote a recent Women in Manufacturing policy report, which was published in October this year. And this report found that in 2022, women accounted for 26% of the workforce in the manufacturing sector. And by the way, we account for 51% of the general population at the moment. So that is very low. And we are earning 17% less than our male colleagues. So Jennifer, why is there a gender gap in UK manufacturing?
There are many factors that explain this gender gap in UK manufacturing. And as part of our research, we have also found a similar gap in other contexts. But what I'm going to do is just give you what survey participants to this policy brief told us about what are the main barriers for women to participate in the sector. So really, from the voices of these women that are struggling to either remain in the manufacturing sector or progress to leadership positions. So in our survey, 68% of the participants mentioned the prevailing non-inclusive culture and related attitudes as one of the main barriers. Then we have 59% consider this glass ceiling, this invisible barrier that women face to progress to leadership position as a barrier. Then the second one, in terms of importance, was the lack of awareness and visibility of job opportunities. And this is also related with the underrepresentation of women in the sector, because we have less opportunities for networking. So whenever there is a job position, we are less likely to receive this job position, these opportunities. 33% mentioned also lack of skills or training support. And 19% of the participants mentioned work-life balance. And this work-life balance is related with having flexibility work, but they highlighted it, that this should be not only for women, but also for men. Because if we really want to transform the balance in the sector, we really want men to be more involved in domestic and care responsibilities.
Brilliant, thanks Jennifer. And Emily, at Micro Spring and Presswork, you've taken an incredible proactive action in actually writing a Women in Manufacturing white paper as a manufacturer of stampings and springs.
Yeah.
Why did MSP write this white paper, and what is the business case for bridging the gender gap?
Yeah, so the reasons for the white paper were purely for why we're here today, to highlight the issue of the lack of women in manufacturing, realising that we've got to acknowledge that and change the industry step by step. And if organisations don't get involved and see that, then that won't help with change moving forward. So the business case point of view, there's definitely a skills shortage in manufacturing, and the gender gap will help to alleviate that. You know, more women in the sector means that there's more people to be to have these highly skilled positions and future-proof the workforce moving forward. As you've already pointed out, there's only 26% of women in manufacturing. It's quite astounding, really, the difference. And the more gender diverse a company is, the more innovative, the more productive, the more engaging, and the more inclusive. So it's a huge business case for why this is so important.
Yeah, and there was something in your white paper about, the green jobs that we call it. So, as we're heading towards sustainability and net zero targets, women can play a vital role in helping manufacturers to change towards meeting their own net zero targets.
That's exactly it. And having those awareness and equal opportunities is so vital moving forward. We also thought from our point of view as a business that you've got to change perception and awareness for young women from a younger age, and understand that manufacturing is a great environment. And yes, it is, and still it is predominantly male dominated. We can change that, and that, we can do everything that men do.
Brilliant, okay. So I'm gonna come on to Jill with that. You've led me on perfectly to Jill. So Jill, obviously, as you said, Interact is a Made Smarter Innovation research center that is addressing the human issues of adopting digital technology in manufacturing. How can we improve gender diversity in UK manufacturing?
Okay, well, I'm going to start by saying we need to get people excited about manufacturing in general. We know we've got a gap. We've got a lot of unfilled vacancies in manufacturing. So I think, you know, as you've said already, part of what we can do, if we can attract a more diverse group of people, including women, then that's fantastic. But I think some of the things we need to do is shout about manufacturing. I think we've kind of talked ourselves out of doing manufacturing when actually we're the eighth nation in the world in manufacturing by value. So we do great things. We've recently done a survey of more than 2,000 people in the UK, asking them about their perceptions of manufacturing. And a fact that really struck me was less than 30% of people felt they had seen or heard stories about manufacturing in the last year. Less than 30%. So I think we should be out shouting about, you know, this is the medicines that were made in Ayrshire. This is the food that was made in Yorkshire. You know, this is the shoes that were made in Manchester, and talking about what we do. Another thing that we recognised in the perception survey is that what women look for in jobs is slightly different to what attracts men to jobs. And women are, one of the things that women think is important is making a valued product or service. So I think if you're a recruiter and you're wanting to attract more women, one of the things you can do is, you know, sell that it's a valued product or service. Other things that are important to women, voice. Women want to be heard, listened to, appreciated. Flexibility probably doesn't surprise us, but flexibility was markedly different from women and men in what they look for in a job. EDI policies. Caring about the planet and sustainability. So what you said earlier about the green jobs, I think that's something that women are attracted to. And I think the other thing that women said to is when they're looking for a job, they want to work for a company that's got values, mission, you know, they've got purpose around them. So that's some of the things that came out of our survey.
So it's not enough just having Inside the Factory on BBC. Do we need manufacturers to do more?
It's a good start, but we need to be talking about it more, and we need to be engaging different audiences. So I think some of the things that when we actually said to our 2,100 people, what can we do to improve women in manufacturing? You know, the kind of things they said was, get it on social media, but get it on a variety of platforms. Like spread the word. We need to get out into the community and do community events. We need to have open door days. Apprenticeships. Again, women manufacturing apprentices, we need more of them. How can we get the message out? And the voice of the young people is really, really important there. So there was quite a lot of a learning from the survey.
Okay, brilliant. So Riddhi, creating a more inclusive culture in the manufacturing industry is obviously a complex task. Could you share some practical steps or best practice that Brompton Bicycles have implemented to foster, you know, a inclusive culture in your workplace?
Absolutely. I mean, some of the items that Jill was just talking to us about, that we got from surveys about what it is that women are looking for, what is it that actually attracts women, and what are those barriers to getting women in. Brompton, from many such surveys, also talking to women that work at Brompton itself, have gathered that data and put their three different stages. One is for how do we get them in the first place?
Yeah.
So we looked at it and we were attracting not as many women as we would like to a couple of years ago. So we started looking at where are we going wrong and what do we need to do differently. So right from how we articulate our job descriptions, we tried to change the narrative in terms of using a much more neutral language. So instead of talking about we're looking for a confident person, because these are words that women look, and we're very hard on ourselves, women in general.
We
look at that and go, ooh, that's probably not me. And even if we don't match about 80, 70% of that, we say, I'm not going to apply for that job. So we, recognizing those things, we started using a more neutral language. We've got policies in place for encouraging a much more diverse panel for an interview. So I remember the days, not at Brompton, but at other organizations where I've entered a room and we've had five middle-aged men interviewing me, and it can be quite intimidating. So we've got a diverse group also to ensure that we get a diverse result for that interview and that position as well. We also have an initiative in place where a lot of male and female role models and people who would like to volunteer go out and reach schools and places where we can talk to women early on, because whether we like it or not, there's a sense of stigma in the industry. I don't know if stigma is the right word, but a block of this is a male-dominated industry, and so many women shy away from thinking about manufacturing as something they could really excel in. So we try and get in really early. So that's to get people in. Once we've tried to get them in, part of convincing them, once you've got the offer, we've looked at our maternity and paternity policies recently around ensuring we have a very fair shared policy in place to allow people to return to work in a very phased way if they want to, make it as comfortable in terms of flexible hours, flexible working for women and men, so that it's not just on the one gender. And then within Brompton, for people who work, I think things that have been really, really beneficial are, other than apprentice work experience programs for young engineers, it's the role model and mentorship and coaching particularly, which are two very different things, but where you get to shadow people in senior roles, etc., because it really helps networking. And when you even shadow and get mentored by different people, you get to see your world outside of just your day-to-day 8-to-5. I've been very lucky of having mentors throughout my career where I've learned so much from them, and Brompton's tried to make the same thing accessible, whether it's through specific examples and people need a quick 15-minute chat with a mentor to guide them through a situation, or guidance for next steps, visibility on careers, or how to upskill women. So we've got programs in place to help upskill women as well. So there are a variety of things that Brompton has tried to do. And the good news is we're seeing, I was just talking to one of the panelists earlier where I was the only one engineer in a team of manufacturing engineers earlier. And now we're a group of, I think, 10 or 13 women and counting. So we're trying to grow every day. And as a business, we have a lot more women in leadership roles than we did earlier. So it's a slow way there, but we're heading in the right direction.
Amazing. Brilliant. And have you seen any kind of product innovation or process innovation from that increase of female engineers, for example?
Absolutely. Actually, that's a really great question, especially in terms of manufacturing. When we were, not just Brompton, but as an industry, were and still are a male-dominated industry, when I'm the head of manufacturing engineering, we're responsible for how the bicycle is made. Our processes, our tools, our cell designs, all of that was geared towards taller, stronger built people. And now that we've got a lot more women in the manufacturing engineering team, but in the organization as a whole, people just look at a cell design and go, I think this needs to be automated because I can't carry this often, or this ergonomics isn't right for, and the entire way you've designed your product, as well as our entire factory floor, we've started to see such a huge shift where the entire diversity aspect has made it so much more easier for women to work on the shop floor, for women to think of the bicycle not just as a product for men, but for women. And not only can they, the warehouse, logistics, manufacturing, all of the way that entire ecosystem has been designed, digitization, innovation, I'd say that it's changed more in the last sort of 10 years than it has in the history of time.
That's amazing. Thank you ever so much, Ridhi. So, Emily, your white paper emphasises the need for flexible working options that Ridhi sort of touched upon. But can you elaborate on, you know, what policies or strategies that you have in place at MSP and how they've contributed to inclusion?
So predominantly since COVID, really, the whole flexible working scenario has changed quite a lot. It was recognised that people could be, you know, as productive at home as at work. So now we have initiatives for hybrid working. So you do a couple of days in the office and some at home, quite successfully. We do different shift patterns as well on the shop floor. So you can choose what shift you want to do. If you want to start early, start a bit later to account for your work-life balance. So if you need to go, obviously pick the children up from school, you can. And it's been quite a noticeable difference in the workforce and allowing everyone to feel more inclusive and valued, because it can be quite traditional seen still. So it's just changing that perception, really. And obviously part-time working is available. And this is across the board, you know. It's men and women that this allows for. It's been really successful so far.
Brilliant. Thanks, Emily. And Jennifer, so if we move on to, you know, key policy recommendations, you know, your report includes those business and policy recommendations, but what are the key ones that you could share with us today?
Well, in terms of policy, what I have observed in my work in the UK context, but also in other contexts, is that there are very few policies, like industrial and innovation policies, that actually address gender inequalities. So I think the first thing is to understand what are the gender gaps in different innovations or industrial settings, and then having targets, what we want to achieve in terms of narrowing or closing these gaps. So that's the first step. And then how we reach women. There are many programs that are great, but if they don't have a gender-sensitive approach, sometimes they will just keep supporting the same kind of firms. So how can we reach women working in manufacturing? Another point is we cannot change or we cannot improve what we don't really know. So it's related with collecting data, and this applies both to firms but also in government agencies. We need to collect more data, and this is also from an intersectional perspective. And what does this mean? We need to know how many women there are, but also want to know how many women from different ethnic backgrounds are working in manufacturing and in which occupations, what working conditions. We want to know also women with disabilities, how many are working in the manufacturing sector. Another point is that, increasingly because of digitization and sustainability, lifelong learn approaches in training are becoming more relevant, and this is particularly more important for women because women are more likely to have career breaks in their lives, so they need to have an opportunity to go back to the labor market and have opportunities to change career if it's necessary and they want to follow this path. And my final point will be related to how integral, how systematic need to be these approaches. If we want to increase the participation of women in manufacturing, we need to think about the main barriers that I discussed before. And one of the main barriers is the time that women spend in caring and domestic tasks. So we need to invest in caring infrastructure and services so that women can participate more in the labor market and in manufacturing.
Yeah, brilliant. And making sure that like those flexible working policies are for men as well. So I've got someone in my team, a man who's about to go on 6 months paternity leave. So making it fair and optional for men and women. And I think there's a shift in the man actually wants to be the parent at home as well. It's not always the woman. So there's things changing that we need to be responsible for as managers and leaders for our teams as well. So, okay. Riddhi, for manufacturing and engineering companies in the audience today, as a key action takeaway, what is the single most important change that manufacturing companies can make to encourage more women to pursue and thrive in STEM and manufacturing careers? It's a big question, I know.
That's a loaded question. And I might actually respond to that by saying, I don't think there's any one thing.
No, okay. That was a bit unfair, yeah.
If there was one thing, I genuinely think with so many people's hearts in the right place, we would have done it all. It is complex. It's going to be quite challenging in terms of how we actually get to a point where we don't even have to talk about it this anymore. But there are a few things. And number one, I think, which we've all spoken about, is awareness and education about this unconscious bias or this assumption that both men and women have about women in manufacturing. And I think if we educate people enough, we raise that awareness, we've solved a good percentage of the problem because people, I think like you said, Jennifer, we know what to do. We know what the problem is. We may not know what to do immediately, but we know what the problem is and we've accepted that it's not okay. So, and in I think the second thing that people can do after raising awareness is make it extremely clear that this is not a women's issue. So this is a societal issue, this is a manufacturing industry issue, and for us to stay globally competitive, it is more important than ever, with all the manufacturing that you just listed that does exist in the country, that we address this. Once we're aware and we all understand that this is a collective thing for us to go solve, there are two things I would encourage people to do within manufacturing. One is, please reach out to the younger future generations, because they find it so inspiring, and they're so lost sometimes when we talk to people about, they have this perception of, I need to pick my career today. And when I talk to them about my journey of, I studied aerospace, I did aviation, I then went and made cars, I'm now making bicycles, they realize manufacturing is so much more. Mm-hmm. And nobody talks to people about, you can work in logistics, you can work in supply chain, you can work in quality. Like, there's so much in manufacturing. You can come do marketing for us in this industry. Like, there's so much. So I think talking to them early and investing that time, ensuring your employees have the time to go be those role models, because we need to show more women exist in this industry that absolutely love doing what we do every single day, that I think will make a huge difference, other than all the other things everybody's spoken about. I think will make a small dent, if not a big difference, in this in this problem we face today.
I mean, Brompton Bicycles had an open day for the Make UK Manufacturing Day in September, and that was really well attended, wasn't it, by the local schools?
It was definitely one of our very, very successful, it was also very satisfying for us, but hopefully we left with having, exactly like you said, with Make UK, we had people who were from all the way 15-year-olds to about, 20, 21-year-olds who came in, got a chance to, pick up a tool, press a button, see what the machine does, learn about all the different careers associated with manufacturing. And I think the more we give people, or kids, as well as women, an opportunity to see what they can do. I mean, I'm here because there were people that sort of believed in me and, got me the opportunity of being here. The only other thing I'll say is, because I've been talking about what businesses can do, I also encourage women to not underestimate the power of networking within your organization as well as outside your organization. Because one thing that I found was also, after speaking to a lot of women, was women have a lot of friends in their workplace. And if you lose that job or you don't get the next one, you've lost your friends, you've lost your support system, you've lost your job. Whereas men tend to, or have statistically, a lot higher percentage of networking outside of that, and opens them to a lot more opportunities. Yeah. So I would highly encourage women to do that. Keep yourselves open to networking, education, and businesses to do all the first half of things that I spoke about.
Yeah. All right, brilliant. Thanks, Rini. Yeah. Jill, in your research, what innovative strategies have you seen in manufacturers in the UK or internationally as well? Because I know your research is starting to cover international, manufacturing companies that attract more women in the industry, but also retain and promote them into leadership roles.
Okay, that's a good question. I think I'll start as well by saying, iterating what you said, it's not a women's issue, it's everybody. And I'm so pleased to see we have a very diverse audience today. I think yesterday, as Megan said, we were at the Changing Perceptions Women in Manufacturing event. And a lot of us came away really excited that we should be going and shouting about it. Put it on social media, tell people about your great jobs. So I think there's something everybody can do. I was very lucky. I was asked to be on a panel by the Scottish Government to look at how do we attract a more diverse workforce into manufacturing in Scotland. So a number of things came out of that, and flexibility was one of the things that was seen as important. So communication, flexibility, thinking about EDI policies. So I'm going to start first of all by talking about the flexibility. And if anybody's interested, Scottish Government actually commissioned some work, and it was a company called Flexibility Works, and they went out and looked for how do manufacturers manage to put flexibility in, and all levels in manufacturing companies. Some really quite examples that have stuck in my head, and you can go watch the videos on these, but Amund Engineering, quite a small manufacturing company just outside Glasgow. And a simple change they made, but they opened their doors early, and they said to people, you can be flexible in your hours. You can start as early as 7. You can start as late as 10. You know, you can change your hours at different times. And that has made a huge difference to their retention and also attracting staff. Another example is Agreco. Agreco is an interesting case because their problem was they were losing a lot of people who after COVID were thinking, I'm going to retire earlier than I'd planned. So there was a lot of people kind of leaving the sector. So they looked at how can they retain people on part-time contracts. So again, some interesting areas there. Agreco was one example. Other examples there, Unilever are doing interesting things. There might be people in the audience from Unilever. Again, Unilever are doing some interesting things about if people are leaving the organisation, but they might still retain them. So that could be from operator right up to manager level, where they keep some kind of link with the organisation, and they might be called back to do things. But they're also ambassadors, which I think is quite interesting, yeah, about selling that, the idea of the jobs and about the company. Another company that there's a case study on in the Scottish Government website is Alexander Begg, and they do textiles, woolens and so on. And they're based in Ayrshire, and they really struggled with getting people to work for them. And one of the things they've done is given them more flexibility in using annualised hours. So they're quite a seasonal business. So one of the things that attracts a lot of people there is that they can say, I want to take a longer summer and I'll make it up at another point. So interesting things, I think, lots of examples in companies. Another thing that came out of the Scottish Government study was a lot of small companies were thinking about EDI policies and trying to reinvent the wheel, when actually there's a lot of good stuff out there. Let's just talk to one another. If there's anybody out there that's thinking about how do I develop a policy that's more about equality and diversity, please do get in touch, because we can point you to lots of good examples that we could share.
Yeah.
And then I think the other point that you made was looking internationally.
Yeah.
And the Interact network is just about to go out and look at what's happening in other countries. So we're going to be looking at what's happening in America. We're going to look at Singapore, who are doing really quite interesting things. And you reported on that, Jennifer, in your study. We're also going to be looking at what do they think the future of manufacturing is in India and Australia. So watch this space, because we're really looking for what are other people doing, and you know, are we leading the way, and what can we learn from others?
Yeah, I think that's great. And I think, you know, I'm the lead of the Gender and Sex Employee Network within Innovate UK KTN. And I know Brompton Bicycles has, you know, a gender network. And I think the other thing is actually talking to each other's employee networks to learn from each other and do best practice together as well. I know me and Brompton are reaching out for that. So it's brilliant. Okay, so to start to close this session, I actually wanted to share a quote with you from Neil Matthews, that's the Managing Director of MSP. So Neil says at the beginning of their white paper, we are facing one of the worst skills shortages in recent history, which is why it is important to turn to discussions towards the future of the workforce. Manufacturers should increasingly be looking to attract and retain talent by ensuring they are creating a supportive and inclusive environment where talent can grow. So I wanted to ask everyone in the audience if anyone would like to share what you're doing in your workplace to create a more inclusive and supportive environment for work. So does anyone want to put their hand up and share with us what they're doing? Have we got anyone? No? Okay, that's fine. So has anyone got a question for our panel on everything we've discussed? Not one question. We've answered all your questions. Oh, go on. Thank you.
Is it on? Can you hear? I'm Jade Croden. I'm from Nottingham Trent University. What can universities do to support building more awareness of the variety of roles that are available in manufacturing? It's close to my heart. I've come from manufacturing into working at universities. And I'd really like to be able to spread that message through our university and others.
I'm going to ask Jill to answer that one, because she works in the university. So University of Strathclyde.
I guess I'll start it. Maybe controversial, not everybody agrees with me. But I think we do a lot to try and encourage women into engineering and to STEM, and I think that's really important. But I think you brought up the point that not all manufacturing jobs are related to, you don't have to be an engineer to work in manufacturing. So I think we do need to kind of communicate both that, you know, there are great opportunities in engineering, but I also see lots of people who are working in supply chain and marketing and, you know, design, all sorts of things, and they're not necessarily coming from that background. So I think we need to communicate that. Another thing I try and do myself a lot of is about that kind of working across disciplines. So at the moment I'm working in a business school, but I've spent a lot of my career in engineering faculties. At the moment I'm in the business school, and I'm trying to say to the business students, you know, go and speak to the guys over in engineering. If you need prototypes made, if you're starting a business and you're thinking about how will I make this, go and speak to some other people. So interdisciplinary working, I think, is something I'm trying to do in my institution.
Yeah, and I think it's recognising that, you know, manufacturing is everywhere. I even was like, you know, in Starbucks this morning and I was watching, you know, the making the coffee, the receipt coming out the till, the coffee machine, all of that is manufactured. You know, the coffee beans, everything is manufactured, you know. So we have to kind of get that image out there as much as possible. So I do something called Scavenger Sunday, where I promote, you know, what's in my home that's made in the UK. So I wear made in the UK clothes. And it's just to kind of promote that it's absolutely every day you are touching something that's obviously manufactured and we wouldn't be here without it. But there's also so much variety and diversity in the UK manufacturing sector in the different products as well. So thank you for your questions. Anyone else got any more questions?
Can I just say that it's a fantastic thing that Megan's doing. She really is, you know, highlighting things that are made in the UK. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Get her on LinkedIn and you'll get her Sunday podcast.
They're like 90-second videos on a Sunday on LinkedIn. So, tune in for those. But, yeah, it's just out of a passion of wanting to promote how wide and diverse the UK manufacturing sector is, you know. And I always buy things made in the UK, which drives my family absolutely crazy for Christmas presents because they can't buy me anything that's not made in the UK. So have we got another question or a thought? Yep, at the back.
Hi, I think we both have a question, but I was just first going to ask, like, you were saying that sometimes women can be left, like, when they leave a job, whereas men, like, have more connections outside of their job, but if it's mostly men in the high-up places, how can women network in the same way?
Didn't hear the last bit, I'm afraid.
Oh, if it's mostly men in the high-up positions, then how can the women network in the same way?
So you're sort of saying how the opportunity for networking and going out to events, for example, is obviously in those management and leadership positions. And if women aren't in those, they're not getting the opportunity to go out and network. And that's a really, really good point. We actually found that at our conference yesterday. You know, there was a lot of women that wanted to join the conference, but couldn't get the permissions to go out and network. So, you know, as you can see around at Advanced Engineering today, it's highly male. You know, for that reason as well. So has anyone got any thoughts, like maybe Riddy or Emily from industry?
I mean, absolutely. One of the reasons I mentioned that was because I faced that myself. You know, when I started in a, right from education, right? When you start in a class where I did aerospace engineering, I was one of two women in a class of 60. And you're like, where do I go from here? And this is in a country like America. I'm not even talking about anything else. So I found that early on. And so there's definitely an issue. But When I'm talking about networking, it's not networking with women only. So you can definitely start there. You know, you can start with finding a friendly face or reaching out to someone on LinkedIn. I'm very accessible. I think so are all of these lovely women here with me as well. You know, making those connections, even if it's online, to get in touch with, I'm looking for something. This is what I'm working towards. How can you guide me? Either within your organization, your university, or online, reaching out and making those connections has proven so beneficial to me. Even if you reach out to 10 people and one hits, that one can put, just that one conversation with someone for 30 minutes can make a very different, valuable onset for someone. You can walk away with some direction in a different way than you were previously thinking about a topic. That's how I went about doing that. And when you find yourself in a position where you can help someone else, it's so important for us to look around us and get those women up there, you know, with us. So that's what I meant by sort of networking. Otherwise, you're absolutely right. We have a very male-dominated industry. How do we all work on this together? Because the last thing we want is a male networking and a female networking, you know.
Yeah, we hope longer term that we don't have to have, you know, women in manufacturing as a title. We shouldn't have to have that. I mean, I kind of feel like that's 15 years ago. And then why are we still having a women in manufacturing conference? I spent days questioning whether I should have the conference yesterday as women in manufacturing and the panel today, because I kind of feel like it's the 1990s rather than, you know, 2023. We shouldn't really be questioning it. But there's obviously still an issue because the stats are there that are saying women aren't in manufacturing. So we need to make some improvements. But on LinkedIn, a lot of my female connections are actually through LinkedIn. And a lot of my male network is from face-to-face events, interestingly. So I've built a huge, I've done a 100-day challenge on LinkedIn this year where I posted every day for 100 days in February to May. And that's how I met Riddhi and loads of other people in the industry, just through my LinkedIn activity. Are you on LinkedIn? Brilliant. Okay, cool. I thought you were going to say TikTok, because I don't know how to use TikTok yet. So I was a bit, that's our next challenge, is to get on TikTok. But, you know, LinkedIn's really, really powerful for that. And don't be afraid just to press connect with someone. You know, I don't think some people do like to do the connection after they've met them face to face. I think a lot of us don't do that now.
A lot of us,
we're just like, connect with us, we'll connect with you, message us. There is a 100-day challenge that we set yesterday for everyone. So it's hashtag WIM23. 100 days, and there's a load of women that are now going to be posting on social media for the next 100 days. If you follow that hashtag, you can start doing it as well, but then just connecting with all those women that are posting, because that's why they're doing it. They're doing it to build their network.
And if I may, I would like to use this opportunity also to invite the men that are here to reflect on how you are supporting women that are working with you. And to reflect, because obviously some of these biases are unconscious. So, and as Riddhi mentioned, we also have unconscious bias. So I will invite you to reflect at how you can support your female colleagues. And Jill mentioned this example of Almond Engineering, and I had the opportunity to talk and interview Michelle Quinn, who is the first woman managing director of the company. And she has an inspiring story that I feature in the policy brief. And the person that helped her through her journey was the managing director that was a man. So I think just inviting all the men that are here also to be part of this change.
And I think something actually that was in the MSP white paper was, you know, Neil Matthews as the managing director did say, it's really uncomfortable. It's actually uncomfortable for us as well, because we don't want to offend anyone. We don't want to make it like, you know, it's not about men and women. It's about us all being together as one, you know, community. So how did the white paper go down in your company, Emily? I'm just interested in that, you know, from...
I think predominantly went down well. I think there was some resistance, I'd have said, and slightly, because people don't want to necessarily recognise it. But overall, it was very positive. I think what I should also say about the networking side, we have a great MSP owned by a company called IndyTrade, and we have a fantastic Women in IndyTrade network. So we all communicate. We have, you know, monthly meetings, and we can discuss things, and it could policy change and how we can sort of move that forward as well across IndyTrade, the companies in the UK. So, and we also do a lot of STEM volunteering too internally, have all local partnerships with local schools. So we speak to young girls and young men from, you know, from primary school age up to secondary. So I think it's all really important. But yeah, overall it was positive. You know, it's got to be addressed, it's got to be acknowledged. It's important to do that and recognise the change that needs to happen.
Yeah.
And yes, it is slowly changing, but it's still there. I think we all feel that.
Absolutely. Well, I've set Jennifer a challenge. we want to increase that statistic, you know, from 26% of women in manufacturing to 35% in the next 5 years. We're only asking for a 2% increase each year over the next 5 years, but I think it's just really important if we can just keep moving things forward as best as we can. Is there any other questions? Yes, go.
Yeah, so we both study mechanical.
I think you're gonna have to shout, I'm afraid, or we'll get the.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
We're both mechanical engineering students at uni, and a lot of the time we're surrounded by men in like group projects and stuff. And I think a lot of the time when you're trying to get your point across, they kind of see you as bossy or like controlling. And to get your point across, you kind of have to be assertive. So like, how do you find that balance, and how do you come across and get your point across and get them to listen to you without having that stereotype of that you're assertive or like too bossy?
Yeah, I'm called bossy all the time. I've got Simon here from my team, so he can vouch for that. But yeah, it's really, really hard. And then it sort of knocks you back, and then you feel like, oh, I've got to keep quiet again. You know, most of the time I am in meetings where I'm the only female in the room, and then I'll talk. You can tell I'm very passionate, and so I am quite assertive, and then it comes across quite, you know, well, they say I'm bossy. But as a man, you would never be, you'd be told you're assertive, whereas as a woman, you're being told you're bossy, you know. And if I get asked to make one more cup of tea, I'm going to go absolutely mad. So, but yeah, Riddhi, do you want to?
I'm going to answer that by talking about my experience. There are two things, and something you can take away, hopefully. One is, when I first started in the engineering world, I am not bossy at all. I'm quite the opposite. I can't be bossy even if I want to be. And in the first few years, I thought I wanted to fit that archetype of what a leader looks like.
Yeah.
And, you know, the person slapping the table and saying, I want this done. And I was so uncomfortable, and I was not getting the results I wanted because I was trying to be something I wasn't. And it went on for a solid 2 years. And now for the past sort of decade, I've tried my best to be who I am, to show role model-wise that, you know what, you can be a empathetic, compassionate person and still be a good leader if that's who you are. And it's helped me deliver results. But to your original point of that's taken 10 years, what do I do now? There was something that I found really useful was it was like a personality study types where you have the red, amber, green and yellow personality types. And it just, if you ever find it or if you connect with me on LinkedIn, I'll send you a link what that looks like. But understanding how different people respond to different situations made it really easy for me to adapt my style. When I'm going into a conversation with a red person, I know if I go and talk to them about the weather and how I'm feeling, they're going to tell me to go take a walk. So I know I want to go to that person
I'm
saying,
red.
Yep, never talking to her about my feelings. But so if I know if I go to her, she means business. I'm talking to her. I'm going to be at 1 o'clock. This is here. And then I'm going to get what I want. Whereas if I go to a person who's super empathetic and start talking to them about this, that, and the other, I'm never going to get it. So my boss right now, he's a very empathetic person. So when I go talk to him, I'm going to tell him, you know what? The people on the shop floor feel this way, and that's why we need to do this different. It's going to connect with him like that, and he's going to give me what I want. So understanding people's types, it also helps us shift our dialogue to get the desired result you want. It might help you.
Something practical you can do is making sure for your meetings that you have a clear agenda and that you go round the table and make sure that everyone's been asked, have they got an opinion? Because obviously I am a very red type, headstrong, chatty person. And not everyone in my team is like that. So I have to make sure, you know, have they all been able to be heard? And also give people an option. Maybe if they don't want to speak up in a meeting, can they email afterwards their thoughts after they've had more time to reflect? Because if they're a blue personality where they need more time to reflect on it and they can't just react or respond in the moment, give that option that some decision making doesn't have to happen in that meeting there and then. It can happen the next day after you've given some people to reflect once they've received the information and then to do an informed decision. That's really important. And I think Riddhi's made a huge, huge point about we've got to be ourselves and you've got to find a way that works for you. So I tried to be very male before 2020, you know, grey suits. I used to be really masculine in my approach, thinking that's how I was going to get accepted in the sector. I used to read up the football scores before I went networking. I hate football. just so I could like enter a, you know, if there's four men talking, I could then enter that conversation, and that's what I tried to do. And I actually burnt out because I wasn't living by myself, my values, or my authenticity. So I took a break and I actually reflected on my own values and who I wanted to be. And that's why I'm in pink today, because I love bright colours, I love Made in the UK clothes, and I want to be myself. And that's been hard for some people to accept, because that's been a big change from how I was 5 years ago. But it means I'm not burning out. I've got more energy and I'm actually being more successful in my career now.
Thank you.
Hi ladies, totally inspirational. I just have one question for you. So we've got 26% of women within the workforce, within manufacturing. What are the statistics on women in leadership roles within manufacturing?
So the, yeah, so Jennifer, yeah. So if anyone didn't catch that, we just want to know what the percentage of leadership roles is.
So according to Make UK data, women in C-suite levels are around 11%. There are some other statistics that are slightly higher, but usually it's because many of the women that work in leadership positions in manufacturing are, for example, in HR positions. So it could be like director, but maybe not in the C-level position. So it's around 11%.
Okay, thank you. What would be the want to increase that by how much over the next 5 years?
How much do we want to increase that by? I don't know. I've already caused issues by announcing the 35% without really doing the research behind it. But yeah, see me in five. I'm either hiding in 5 years or I'll be here and holding my hands up. But hopefully we'll be saying it's 50% in 5 years. So yeah. Okay, I think that's, have we not got any more questions? Oh, one at the back.
Hi, just a quick one. Out of curiosity, are there any countries in the world that lead the way in women in manufacturing that the UK could look up to?
We didn't hear that. I'm really sorry. I don't know if you can come forward.
Yeah, come on.
Sorry.
Are there any countries around the world that the UK can look to as being leaders for women in manufacturing?
So I think it's Singapore, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's
also an issue of technological sophistication. So in developing countries where, for example, textile and apparel are the main industries, these industries are female dominated, so there are more women. But historically what has happened, and happened as well in the UK, was that as manufacturing became more technologically sophisticated, less women participated in the sector. And you can see the same trend, for example, with programming. At the beginning of this type of occupation, it was more like a female-dominated field. Then as it became more complex, it became a male-dominated field. So it's, as these jobs start becoming more attractive, again, it's a wider societal.
It is a wider societal, and I'd also like to add to that, because my ethnicity, and I'm from India originally, and we've got so many organizations and manufacturing plants that have been set up. Like there's an Ola in Tamil Nadu, there's a Unilever-led company called Gits, there's Kirloskar, there are lots of companies and factories that are set up which are all women as well, which was unheard of until a long way away. Now, whether they're the industry trendsetters or not is a different story, but a lot of developing nations trying to do a lot in terms of empowering women within the manufacturing sector as well.
Brilliant. So I think we've got to close now. Are we okay? If anyone's got any more questions? Oh, Simon and my team. Ask a nice question, Simon.
I wondered if I could add a point to the question the ladies had over there around in meetings. So from my perspective, I never get called bossy, but what I get called is aggressive and angry a lot because I get very passionate about stuff. And from an NLP perspective and communication perspective, two things you can do to really help you is maintain tone of voice, because if you look at stereotype, it's that whole pitch thing, which I do when I get really angry. So try and maintaining a pitch is really important to be seen as assertive and not bossy. And the other thing is use of I, not you. when you make it your perspective, so I believe, I think, even if you know the person opposite you is a complete idiot, this is wrong, try and veer to I actually believe, or I would suggest, and that again looks more collaborative. You're making exactly the same point, but you're not letting someone read into something negative in you. You're making it about you having a legitimate place in that conversation, which you should have. That was it. Just advice.
Thanks,
that was
Simon.
All.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Millie from Finally Agency. I heard at a different talk recently, I just thought I'd share because it's quite interesting. They said, if you just hire people that look and sound like you, you may as well do the job yourself, which I just thought was a very good point. But my question is, if there are organisations here where they're thinking, oh gosh, like our Meet the Team page on the website, we all just look exactly the same, a woman might not want to apply.
Yeah.
How can organisations make it a welcoming place if you are that first hire that's the female or that's like against the norm of, you know, what the other people in your organisation look like? What are some steps that a business could take to make their company an attractive place to apply for as a woman, and then also once they've made their first female hire, for example, how can they make their organisation a place that that person will feel welcome once they've joined and they're not like, oh god, I've just walked into a room of 20 guys and I don't know how to connect with them. How can they make it easier for that person?
I think that's a great question, maybe for Emily.
Basically, I had a similar... I did my engineering at college and I was the only female in the class, which is quite intimidating in the first instance. And then at work, when I came in 9 years ago, there would have been two in accounts and one other. In terms of progression for me, I just basically decided I wanted to go more technical. I found a mentor basically at work, and that really helped. I've never found it to be uninclusive. Everyone was really warm and welcoming when I started as well, and I was 24, 25, so at that age you're still a little bit unsure, aren't you, of some things. And I think it's just I still felt I had to put a bit of a facade up in a sense and pretend a bit of a defence. I think Megan kind of highlighted that too. You feel you've got to act a certain way.
Yeah.
And I don't think you do. It's just be yourself, be kind, and know that you're good at what you do and you deserve to be there, I think. Make sure you've got self-worth and value and understand you're doing a great job. And I think that's the way to do it. You've got to have that mindset as well, that you're no different, you know. You accept, yes, you're female, but you're no different to anybody else. Everyone's equal. And I think what you portray is what you get back as well.
Yeah.
So I think all of that comes into it, really.
And I think imagery is really important. So, you know, when people Google your companies, what images are coming up? So actually, if people are doing more on LinkedIn, for example, like, then, you know, if people Google Innovate UK KTN, I might possibly come up a bit more than, you know, it was very heavily male-dominated previously a few years ago. So getting your female staff to have the confidence to do social media,
yeah,
and also doing your own imagery on your websites as well, where you take more pictures of, you know, women working, you know, real-life images,
yeah,
of them working as well. You know, that will come up in your Google images or when people search for you or look for you. So, because when people are applying for jobs, they're researching you as much as you're researching them. So it's important that, you know, it's a two-way street, isn't it, jobs interviewing? And especially with the skills shortages, we've got even more of a job to do to attract that talent into our sector. So I don't know if Riddy wants to share anything from Brompton.
I mean, we even walked our shop floor for the entire factory from a women's perspective. And it was simple things like, you know, oh, all these safety shoes speak only to you know, a very male dominated, whether it's the color palette, whether all the sizes were 7 and up, we were like, this is not female oriented at all, not catering to that audience. Toilets, you know, do we have enough male and female? Do we have female bins in every toilet or not? You know, all that sort of stuff, because these are things which men wouldn't think about. But when you look at the environment where, you know, where even Brompton does a lot of apparel as well, so we're like, you know, are all the female prints, etc., at the back? Why are they at the back? Let's get them up front. So it's that environment that we walk in, which when people come to interview, if you're the first female there, it will talk to you in a very different way. And I encourage businesses like that, like you said, that are completely male-dominated and looking to attract more women, to have a very conscious perspective of what their place looks like. Is it truly inclusive or not, with these practical sort of steps that will really help invite more women into their organizations.
Okay, brilliant. I think we're out of time. So what I just wanted to ask of you all, we are going to be in the VIP lounge at 3:30. If you want to find us to ask us any more questions or want to know how you can get involved in the Women in Manufacturing initiative as well, we've got some work streams going forward. But thank you ever so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks to all who participated in the panel this year. It was well attended across the board by men and women. It was great to see that there are initiatives that are being proactively brought to encourage and equally reward women on a level pegging with men, of course. But there's a lot of work to do and it will take time. We are starting to see all sorts of individual successes coming through from universities into the industry and rising up to the very highest levels, but there's a lot of work to do. Join us again for another Advanced Engineering Talks podcast. For more information, visit advancedengineeringuk.com. Thank you. Goodbye.